Our scripture reading this morning is Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 1 through 8. For everything there is a season, and a time for every matter under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones and a time to gather together stones, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to seek and a time to loose, a time to keep and a time to cast away, a time to tear and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace.
Good morning and Happy New Year. Appreciate Robert leading. I know who holds tomorrow. That takes me back at the church in Wetumpka we attended when I was in high school. One of the old-time song leaders, he wouldn't like being called an old-time song leader, but he was. One of the old-time song leaders, Cloyce Banta, would lead that song, and I'd never heard it till we went to Wetumpka, and it was a pretty hymn, and I enjoy it. And it pretty well summarizes what we have to say today. I'm going to go ahead and say it all anyway, but it does a really good job of summarizing. I tried to get someone to lead Turn, and no one wanted to lead that one today, so we'll take I Know Who Holds Tomorrow instead, and that'll work. With a new year, I've often said that preachers are only expected to say something profound like once a year, and that's on the New Year's sermon when you're supposed to get everybody started out right. Everyone is suddenly kind of in a mood for something to get them started on some new project, and we make our resolutions that we plan on ignoring in a few weeks or days, and we have all these plans and commitments. I've got a few I'm excited about, and I know where most of them will end up, but that's okay, because it's good to think about the things we'd like to do in the coming year. Sometimes we look at years and we're frightened about what lays ahead. Sometimes we're just happy to leave behind the year which will not be named, the year that we were through with. We put it behind and move on, and we're happy about that. But in any event, however the year has been or will be, it is a time of looking at life and asking those deep, thoughtful questions. We ask, you know, are we what we want to be? Are we where we want to be? Have things we accomplished what we want to accomplish? Have things grown and matured to the state we'd like them to mature to? What would happen if I were in the same place next year? Is a question we're really asking when we finish one. Life is a life full of changes, and I think this is a time of year when we notice this. We can quote Shakespeare because he's fun to quote. All the world's a stage and all the men and women merely players. So they have their exits and their entrances. And one man at his time plays many parts, his acts being seven ages. And if you read the rest of that, he goes on and elaborates on the seven ages of man. It starts out in the cradle and the little child who needs protection. And then the child who's fascinated by the world and curious about it. Then the young man that falls in love. And then the slightly older man who regrets falling in love but now has, you know, a career and a job and family and all those worries to care about. And then it goes through the ages of life and the different seasons and how things matter to you differently in every season of life. Things that you thought were immensely important. I don't know why I was thinking just the other day about the year I was a senior in high school. I don't know what made me think of it, but I did. I think it was someone I had seen on Facebook from high school that I hadn't seen in a long time, and it made me think about my senior year of high school. And I was thinking about things that I thought were very important at that time and how long it's been since I've thought about any of them. And at the time, they were, you know, earth-shattering, and now they're not so much. Seasons is the way the Bible chooses to talk about this phenomenon. Seasons of life and how things change, and nothing is ever quite stationary. It's a moving target, this thing we call life. And that's appropriate. It's the way it's supposed to be. The text we'll consider this comes from Ecclesiastes chapter 3. It's going to be familiar because people quote from it from time to time. It's one of those passages when people quote from it, it's usually because it's convenient. It makes some point they want to make. And when we don't like it, we just ignore it. But it's true. Ecclesiastes chapter 3 is a discussion of the substance of life, especially as it relates to seasons of life and how they change. Chapter 3, verse 1 is really often overlooked in its significance because we like the rhymey part later where it's a time for this and a time for that and it sings song. But the first verse has a pretty profound point in it. Verse 1 says, "For everything there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven." The idea of describing life and breaking it down into seasons is God communicating to us that this is a quality, a character of life that you should expect. Now, we expect it in the course of a year. If it was winter year-round, some of us would be happy and some would be miserable. If it was summer year-round, some of us would be happy and some of us would be miserable. But none of us expect that, right? We all expect that sometime it'll be winter and then it will be spring and then it will be summer and then it'll be fall. This is the way a year works. The year has been God's way of teaching us that this is the way your life works. But however, it happens more irregularly, and it happens without as much notice, and so we tend to overlook that point. But Scripture says your life is composed of seasons. Your life has different moments where different values occur to you, different priorities are available, different strengths and abilities are at your disposal, different resources. The young family has a different set of resources and priorities as an older family does. Right? This is just the seasons of life as they change. Children at a certain age need different things from their parents. Children at a different later age may have. Seasons of life come and go. Professionally, you have different seasons of life. I was reading something the other day about the seasons of a church minister. And I thought it was pretty interesting because it was someone who was in his 70s writing about life as a minister. And he was charting this course. And I thought, wow, I'm right there. Is this where it goes? And it was kind of interesting as he described, you start out in your 20s, you're trying to find your voice and trying to find something to say. And in your 30s, you think you found it and want everyone to listen. That's where I'm at. Listen to me. And then it goes on through these seasons of life. And then he says, suddenly, people aren't listening as much. But the people that do listen are benefited. And you start the mentoring process of helping the next generation. And he's charted this course, and I thought, yeah, probably all professions have something like that, where there are seasons of usefulness and seasons where you can do more or less. The same is true as a Christian. The new convert has certain benefits and strengths that only the new convert has, right? The excitement, the newness, it's the first day of the year for the new convert, right? And it's super exciting. Wonderful thing happens. You haven't even got your hair dry from the baptistry. And suddenly everything's new and exciting. And then there are other seasons where you slow down a little bit. And hopefully you don't give up, but you slow down and you change the way you approach the task. There are seasons to the life as a Christian. Things that an elder can do in the church that they couldn't have done when they were young. Things that a role model can do later in life they couldn't do when they were young, but things that the young can do, that you get the point. This is the way that it works. There is no normal. And that's the lie we tell ourselves, of course, that there is. One of my secret favorite movies, it's not one of those movies you brag about watching because it's pretty violent and it's rated R and I probably shouldn't like it. But I love that old Western is from the 90s. It's not that old. I love the movie Tombstone and I love Val Kilmer's portrayal of Doc Holliday. He has so many memorable lines in that movie. But the one that I like the most is not the funny ones he says to people he's going to shoot. Those are interesting. But the one that I like the most is at the end of the movie when Doc Holliday is dying and he asks his friend Wyatt Earp, what do you want to do with your life? And he says, I just want to live a normal life. And Doc Holliday says, there is no normal life. There's just life. And that, of all of the strange things said in that movie, is the one that has stuck with me the most, is that there is no plateau in life where you get there, and this is the lie we tell ourselves, that we're almost there. All of us, no matter where you are in life, if you're 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, all of us think there's this plateau. And we're almost there. And this will be the year. I'm going to get over the hump. I'm going to finish that project. I'm going to do that thing I've been putting off. And this is the year I get over that hump and then everything is just smooth, right? I will plateau and I will reach normal. But there is no normal. It doesn't exist. It's a fiction that we've created. There is no ordinary. When I deal with a family in crisis and they're having some problem with, again, whether it's the marriage or the children or someone has died or an illness, and they'll often say, we just want things to get back to normal. And they're in the rare situation where they don't think they're almost there. They think we were there, but we're not now. We want to get back to that. And again, it's this fiction that we have, that we've convinced ourselves there's this thing called ordinary. There's this thing called normal, and that's where I need to be. And everything else is just an aberration from the mean. But I'm going to get back to that normal. And what does the writer tell us here? This simply doesn't exist. Life is in motion. There is no normal. There is no ordinary. There is no plateau. There is no place you get to and everything just kind of stays the way it is. Instead, it is in motion. There are only seasons and times. And when you're in a season, the Scriptures will help us to learn to do what to do in that season, to do the task appropriate to it. But we're not going to stay there. And there is no hint in Scripture that there is a part of your life that you get to and stay. In fact, if you read the Scriptures, quite often people are rebuked for staying in one part of their life too long. When he tells people that we're supposed to be maturing, be no more children. He's not saying it's wrong to be children. He's saying you're not supposed to be children anymore. You stayed too long in one season of life, and it was time to transition into something new. In life, there is no normal. There is no ordinary. 2017 is not going to be ordinary, and it's not going to be normal because it doesn't exist. It's going to be whatever it is, whatever season of life you've entered. And so to describe these seasons and times of life, we get the sing-song part in verses 2 through 8, and it's fun to read. We'll just go ahead and read it because it is fun to read. A time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep, a time to laugh, a time to mourn, a time to dance, a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to seek and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to cast away, a time to tear and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. And it has these beautifully coupled opposites, right? And in each one, we probably, depending on where you are and which season of life you're in, you probably have one that you would like. There's one of those that seems preferable, and your temptation is to pick that one. That's the one, right? That's what life's supposed to be about. And what the wise man is telling us in chapter 3 is all of those will occur in your life in appropriate places. All of them. All of them have a season. And I'll just take a couple of examples, not specifically, but just what I've noticed in the text. There's a time of lament and a time of joy. In life, you are not always going to be miserable and sad, but you are sometimes going to be miserable and sad. In life, you are not always going to be joyous, but you're supposed to sometimes be joyous. It's not one or the other, and I think we have a tendency to pick one and say that's normal and that's the way it needs to be. If you're a serious person and you think the world's miserable, then you think that's normal and that's the way it's supposed to be, and you try to avoid the other stuff, right? And I don't want to be happy, and I'm going to sit through the sermon like I'm sucking prunes out of a jar, and I'm going to let everyone know just exactly how serious I am, right? And we do this. It's okay. But that is picking one of the seasons and saying that's it, that's the right one. I think there are other people who pick the other one, who say it's always happy all the time. And speaking of preaching, they get aggravated when the preacher says anything negative or talks about sin or things you might not want to do, because that's not very happy. That's not very cheerful. How does that make anybody feel good? It doesn't. And that's the point. There are appropriate times for all these things. I'll complain about my preaching brethren for just a minute because we get them confused too. I'll tell you this. This is a personal rant. I think sometimes funerals are too happy. I have been to funerals where people just wanted to talk about, well, we're just going to celebrate this person's life. We're going to celebrate. We're going to celebrate. We're going to celebrate. And I know what they're trying to do. If I get happy enough, I won't have to mourn. But there's a time to mourn. they're sad. There are things to be happy about, but they're sad. We lost someone. Paul never tells the Christians, don't be sad. He says, don't mourn as those who have no hope. That's 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. He says, don't despair, not a hopeless lament, but we do mourn. And I don't think we have to rush to the happy parts. I think it's okay to have an appropriate season of mourning when someone is lost. In the same way, it's appropriate to be happy about good things. If you're the person who's always taking the best possible scenario and finding what's wrong with it, stop it. It's okay for things to be good. It's okay for God to bless you and make your life better. Be happy about it. And if you look at the Christ and his life, you see both of those things. You see him with a temper in the temple, right? Woe to you Pharisees, scribes, and blind guides, you whited sepulchers. He's angry with sin in the world. You also see him at weddings. You see him hugging children. And when the disciples are too serious and say, well, get the children away, he says, whatever. This is what the kingdom's all about. Let the little children come unto me. There are times for joy. There are seasons for it. There are times for lament. And just knowing which one is appropriate, you don't have to rush through one because you have a responsibility to the other. Be an appropriate place. Beginnings and endings. January 1, of course, we're all thinking about beginnings, and that's exciting. But it's hard in life. It's really hard in life to decide when to start things. It's really hard to decide when to end things. Why is that? Well, I just told you. There's this useful fiction that we all have called normal. And in the world of normal and ordinary, there are no beginnings and no endings. Everything's the same every day. And so it's really hard to decide something needs to start or something needs to end. But Christianity is quite a lot about that. Read your New Testament. How often does Jesus say, here's something you need to stop doing. It needs to come to an end. How often does Jesus say, here's something you need to start doing. It needs to begin. And no matter what season of life you're in, there is something you need to stop. Use my power of telepathy here. There is something you need to stop. There is something you need to start. How do I know that about you? Because you're human. And you haven't got there yet. We have not reached some mystical plateau where everything's the way it's supposed to be. There are always times for beginnings and endings, whether it's professionally or personally, spiritually, family-oriented, church-wise, beginnings and endings. It's a reality. I was laughing with Celine about this passage. The last time I preached on this passage, I know exactly the date and I know exactly where I was, because it was when I announced to the congregation at Barnes that I was going to be leaving there because I had taken a job at the Glenpool Church of Christ. I'm not leaving, by the way, so don't. I told Celine, this is not me, my way of quitting. But the last time I preached this passage was the day I made that announcement, and it was a way of studying myself into it and thinking, how do you know when to leave somewhere? And how do you know when to start somewhere? And this was a passage that was helpful to me, that there was a time to do something different. I hope this is not that moment. But there are times of beginnings and endings, and to know them is a matter of wisdom. There are seasons of peace and of conflict. That's the hardest one for me. It really is. It's not that I know there are time for both. It's knowing which one is which that I really personally struggle with. I know from the New Testament that there are times when I am supposed to swallow my pride, be quiet, and get along. That is a Christian moral imperative that I'm supposed to practice. I also know from the New Testament that there are times when there are values that must be defended and that I've got to raise a ruckus and people aren't going to like it and there's going to be conflict, especially as a preacher, but as a human being, but that's going to be part of my life. Where you're supposed to draw a line in the sand and say, no more, not cross that line. But which ones are which? Anybody else have that problem? I'm betting you all do, because you're human, and this is part of life. Deciding which time is this? Is this a season when I put my armor on, go to war, or is this a season where I'm supposed to be the peacemaker? And knowing which one is which is hard. And it doesn't matter whether it's your coworkers, your family, your children. Parents have that problem. When do I say, just be quiet, we'll get past it? And when do I say, this is a learning moment, we're going to get this one right? Right? It's hard to figure that out. But there are seasons for both in life, because that's the way life is constructed. That's the way that we're made. So what this passage is telling us is that there are these seasons of life, and we are to expect it. And there are simply no normal moments that we're looking for. However, if you stop there, you miss a very interesting discussion. And I think a lot of folks do, because that's a convenient place to stop. My Bible even has a section header there, so you stop and read no more. But following that, the writer then asks the question that you may be thinking. He begins verse 9 by saying, "What gain has the worker from his toil?" See, here's the problem with what I've just discussed. If everything changes and we never get to a steady place and get to stop there, what is all this for? Because that's the fiction I live by. Don't you tell yourself, "I'm working now, but I'm getting to that place somewhere where I get to normal and ordinary and everything pays out, where all my hard work was worth it, where everything is the way it's supposed to be, my kids are going to be well behaved, I'm going to eat and diet right, and the people I want are going to be elected, and my town is going to be run the way I want, and all the speed limits are going to be what I think they ought to be, and everything in the world will be what it's supposed to be." And the writer here seems to say, "Well, no, that's never going to happen. Things change, and there's seasons for everything." If that's true, what am I working for? If it's a moving target each and every day, why bother trying to accomplish anything? Again, as for me as a parent, this comes up a lot. If every time I get my kids figured out, they grow up a little more and change, and I have to start over, what was the point of that last phase of life? If professionally, every time I get something figured out, it seems like now there's a new problem, what was the point? Relationally, with your spouse, you know, the person you marry changes the whole time you're married. There's like a 7, 6, 8 year cycle, depending on who the person is, where it's like you're married to a whole new person every decade or so. And just as soon as you figure it all out and you've come to normal, you've arrived, things are working, that's the warning bell. People are about to change, and it's like being married to a new person, and you got to start all over. Well, what's the point? What's the point of working it out if it's a moving target? And that seems to be his question. What gain has the worker from his toil if something is always changing? If there's always another task, another season to master? What's the point of all this? And he has a handful of answers that I find very helpful. Verses 10 through 11 give us this. "I have seen the busyness that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. He has made everything beautiful in its time." That phrase at the beginning of verse 11 is magnificent. Everything is beautiful in its time. One of the old Jewish translations, I forget which one it is, says that everything is beautiful when it blooms. And the Hebrew is really rich here. It's the idea that there is, just because things are changing doesn't mean that nothing matters. It means that all of these moments matter in their own way. Which season is the most beautiful? Which season is the best? Truth is, all of them have beauty to them, don't they? Winter can be beautiful. Oh, it can be harsh and awful, but it can be beautiful. Summer can be beautiful. Oh, it can be hot and miserable, but it can be beautiful. Fall, spring, everything has something built into it that's beautiful. And what the text here seems to tell us is everything that you become, if you're doing what God wants, has its own beauty you're supposed to pause and appreciate. God seems to like, and this is a strange phrase, but work with me, God seems to love becoming more than being. And why do I think that? Because he made a world of seasons, and he made people that change. He could have just made us like this. He could have picked that perfect spot in life, the sweet spot. When is that? I don't know. But let's suppose there is one. He could have picked it, and that was the way you were born. Your very first birthday, you were 35, or whatever perfect age is that, you know, and you're in your prime, whatever that is. And you stayed there in that perfect physical condition, mental condition, professional position, your entire life until the day you die. When you die, you just drop dead. 35, I was going to say not a gray hair, but never mind. Whatever age it is, right? Whatever it is, boom, that's it. He could have made us stationary beings that just were one thing forever. And it's not the way he made us. He made us beings who change, who start out one way and who grow and grow and change and grow and change. And he seems to celebrate it. He made a universe that does this. that has seasons built in, that changes. Nothing's static. It's all moving. God seems to think it's beautiful. And you know that it is. Again, as a parent, this means so much to me, because you know that it is. The same thing I was frustrated with a moment ago, we also celebrate. Parents, when you see them grow up, don't you just stop and gasp at the beauty of it? And there's horror too, right? The idea that, oh no, what's happening? How did that little baby get so old? Why is my baby driving a car? What is happening now, right? There's some horror to it too, but it's beautiful and it takes your breath away. When you see them do something for the first time and you say, there they are, they changed again. And it's beautiful. Or they bring the grandbabies down to visit and you say, ta-da, new season of life, right? And something beautiful happens. Those changes are wonderful when we notice them. If you live in constant misery looking for normal, then you don't notice the beauty of the seasons. You're just frustrated by, well, this isn't the way it was yesterday. This is not the way I thought it was going to be. And you don't get to pause and realize, hey, this is pretty good. I like this new thing. God made it. Getting old has been kind of fun. Older, I'm not old yet. There you go. I said so. Getting older has been fun. I mean, it's been different, and there are things I can't do as well. Friday night, for the first time in my life, I got to sleep a little at a lock-in. It was great. Hayden, young, spry youth intern, stayed up all night. I went to my office at 3 a.m. and turned the lights out. It was great. Okay, it was different. It used to be that that was exciting for me to stay up all night. Now it's a punishment of some kind. And what happened? Well, it's just different. But it's also a beautiful thing, right? The things change and they're wonderful. And we first year we did camp together was 2003. I was the ripe old age of 20. And we were doing church camp out there at Frog Road. And now I'm 34 and doing church camp this summer, and it's very different. The things I enjoy are very different. How fast I run is very different. How much sports I do is very different. It went from quite a lot to zero, right? And that changes, but it's also beautiful. The new role is beautiful. And so there's a beauty of that. God declares this changing seasons of human life beautiful. And what humans have to do, this is our commission, we have to learn to appreciate the moments more than desperately seeking the ends. If you are constantly looking for the thing you're going to get, or that stationary plateau, can't wait till I get there, then you don't enjoy any of the seasons that God gives you. If you're always waiting for summer, you don't enjoy beautiful fall leaves or crisp winter mornings or spring blossoms. You just complain about, you know, miserable cold and raking leaves and pollen in the spring. And you're just always waiting for summer, right? But if you'll take a moment and look at where you are, as a Christian, we're going to hand out the SHAPE survey next week. You are at a particular place in your usefulness to the kingdom. And the reason the elders have asked that we do it every year is because we know that position moves. But this year, you may be able to do things you couldn't do last year or not. It changes. So every year they ask, what can you do? Where are you? And they ask you to find that and appreciate it and give value to it. Not only that, the other part of the answer comes at the end of verse 11. Also, he has put eternity into man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. And that's cryptic. That's mysterious. What does that mean? God has put eternity into man's heart seems to mean that God has put in humanity the spiritual quality that recognizes the bigger, grander picture of things, but does so ignorantly because we don't understand it. We wouldn't understand what God was doing if he told us. That there is and there remains mystery to God's purpose and how he's working it out in the world. There are bits we understand. There are bits he has revealed. There are bits he has revealed and we still don't get. God has put eternity in our hearts, but he says not so that we could understand from beginning to end. The sense of what's going on is not the same as perfect knowledge of life. You don't have it. So why is it important to stop and appreciate the beauty of the seasons? Because if there was a perfect end, a prime moment in your life you were headed to, you wouldn't know what it was anyway. If there was a moment in your life where you were the most useful, the most fruitful, the most productive as you will ever be, the most influential, you still won't know it. When are the best years of your life? Ask somebody. When were they? Do we ever notice them while we're in them? No one ever says, these are the good old days. They always say, those were the good old days. It's always afterwards that we figure out, wow, that was a magnificent moment. So many wonderful things were happening. I wish I had those back. Right? And so what the writer here says is, God has given you a sense of this eternity, this magnificent working out of God's drama in the universe, but not so that you understand it from beginning to end. You have ignorance of it. You might be living right now in the most important, fruitful, beautiful, magnificent, blessed season of your life. And so the writer says, enjoy it. Not enjoy it in a hedonistic, selfish way, but in a fruitful, humble way that says, look at this beautiful thing that God has given me. I don't understand it, but here I am. And there is something to be done at this moment in life. We need someone instead to chart a course for us, and he has. You know what I'm supposed to do when I'm a young man? There are passages in Scripture that says, here's the work of a young man. You know what you're supposed to do when you're an old man? There are passages in Scripture that says, here is the work of an old man. In all phases of life, God has given us guidance. Our job is not to look for normal. Our goal is to say, where am I and what has God put in front of me to do at this moment in my life? And so verses 12 through 13 emphasizes that. I perceive that there is nothing better for them than to be joyful and to do good as long as they live. Also that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil. This is God's gift to man. Your job is to be busy in every season of life with the busyness of God. Now watch that. We do something opposite. We're busy in every season of life with selfishness. And we always say, later on, I'll get around to God's stuff when I've got my stuff worked out. Here's the hint. You don't ever get there. There is never a moment when selfishness has been satisfied and finally you can give what's left over to God. It never happens. Instead, every moment has its own task and its own potential. Every season and hour of life has its own work to be done. Your job is to be doing good and to be celebrating that goodness. Not bemoaning it, not looking back and saying, boy, I wish I was back over there, or boy, I can't wait till I get there. This is where you are right now. This is the goodness that God has put in front of you, and it is wonderful. Or to put it in the words of the text itself, this is God's gift to man. This year is a gift from God. You don't deserve it. You have not earned it. I don't know if it will be better or worse. I don't know if it's the bright future you're looking for or something you'll look back at and say, well, that was a disaster. I just don't know. What I know is there will be opportunities to be Christ-like. There will be opportunities to do good. There will be opportunities to celebrate the goodness of God. There will be times to lament the disaster of sin in this world. There will be time for every bit of it. And your job is to, with wisdom, approach the task in the Spirit of Christ and redeem the time that God has given you for His purpose. This is God's gift, and it is beautiful. Today you have this beautiful moment. It's not beautiful because it was a beautiful sermon or a beautiful song service or the sky was pretty. It's beautiful because it is a gift of God to you to reflect on your life, to take another breath, and consider where you are. If you are not in a relationship with God through His Son, Jesus Christ, if you have not come to Him in faith and ended some parts of your life to begin the new ones in Him, if you have not begun to be baptized to walk in a new life of beginnings, then this is the time and place to do that, to celebrate this season of your life as a life of faith. We're going to stand and sing a word of encouragement. If there's anything we can do for you, won't you come at this time?